Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
I want to tell you about the first time. I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like? Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Eddie Bales here, and I'm excited. I want to share something with you that I reread a book that I read in the past. It's a book called The Jewish Phenomenon. I heard about it lots of different times from different leaders that I follow, and I said, let me check this book out. Sounds interesting, because I've noticed, you know, maybe you've noticed that, you know, the Jewish community tends to be very prosperous, very wealthy, if that makes sense. And if you want to do what someone else is doing, hey, the best thing to do is to do it, to duplicate and replicate what they're doing, and you can have the same success. So you know, some of you guys may catch this on a replay. I'm going to, you know, start providing some value for you. And if you get value, then just give me some likes, give me some shares, give me some comments if you want to get some feedback. But, you know, today I'm going to share with you a little bit out of this book called The Jewish Phenomenon. And one of the things it says is seven keys to the enduring wealth of a people, right? So not just wealth for one person, but wealth for a group of people, right? And so maybe you want your family to create a legacy of wealth. I know that's something that I'm looking to break right now, and it is going to happen. It is happening. It's already happening right now, so I'm really excited about it. But let's just jump right in. I'm actually only going to share just two things, actually, out of the seven, because I don't want to keep you guys all day. But I wanted to share two things, really, that I thought were very, very impactful. Number one is one of their philosophies is they're really, really, really big on education. Like, being a lifelong learner, you can see all these books here in the bookshelf here. I'm obviously a big reader, right? And that's just one bookshelf in my office. I got several. But so, you know, being a lifelong learner, like someone who is always looking to learn and grow, you know, that's one thing that they stress from a baby to in the Jewish community is you are going to get the best education possible. Because, see, if you know better, you do better. And when you have more education, not only do you put yourself in better environments, but you also become a better person, obviously, just from the information and the knowledge and the training that you're getting. So, you know, education, one thing I thought that was pretty profound, let me just look at my notes here, is that it said, build your child's self-esteem. And that is huge, right? Because, you know, if a child tends to have a lower self-esteem as a child, then they tend to grow up with that and carry that low self-esteem, right? And so what's in the Jewish community, they actually start from at birth, and they start pushing them in situations where they're constantly around people and they're speaking in front of people, they're speaking in front of audience. They just give them opportunities where they can develop and grow their growth as a child, right? So education is huge. It's very, 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 very important. Let me show you something else that it said. It said, develop and demonstrate informed and literate habits, meaning that obviously you could read, but you become a person that can demonstrate as a speaker maybe, or as a you know, just somebody who's putting themselves out there in the community. So, and then the other thing it says is that they create the education expectation. So the expectation is you're going to get as much knowledge as possible. You're going to go to school. You're going to go to college. You're going to go to further your education, because that is just what they do, right? So that's a big one, is education, right? Matter of fact, there's a statistic that I don't have the statistic handy, but there's a statistic that says that, oh, thanks for the likes. There's a statistic that says that, you know, when you have a certain education, you're going to get a certain level of income. And when you raise that education to another form, you're going to get another level of income. So the more income, the more education you have, the more your income is going to go up, if that kind of makes sense. The second thing that it went over that I thought was really, really big is they teach their children to be professionals. So you're either going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a business person. So you're going to be some type of professional. Even if you're not a doctor or a lawyer, you're going to have some type of, you're going to be a professional, if that makes sense. And one of the things I thought was really, really powerful is it even said in the book, by the way, the book, The Jewish Phenomenon, really, really good book. But it said that even if you're a professional, your goal is to be that professional. But part-time, after that, your goal is to move into entrepreneurship, right? Because they said, oh, here's another one, a big one. I don't want to go through all my notes, but I'm just excited, if you can't tell, right? Hey, Pastor Parker, good to see you here. But one of the things that it said is, oh, this one was right, this was huge. It said, if you are not an owner, you are an outsider. If you're not an owner, you're an outsider. I thought that was critical, right? Because that what that's saying to me is that they want you not just to work for somebody. There's another thing it said in the book, and I'll put my book down. It said that you rarely find someone in the Jewish community that works with their hands, if that makes sense, unless they're a surgeon or something of that nature. But they typically have the mindset of, I'm going to be a professional. I'm going to be a manager. I'm going to be a supervisor. I'm going to be someone at the top. And there's nothing wrong with thinking that way, because their parents teach them that growing up, right? So as they grow up, this is just the way they are, right? And it's no wonder why they seem to excel in everything that they do, is because that's how they're taught. So, you know, why am I sharing this with you guys? Because I want your culture to be that as well. It's not something that's set apart just for the Jews. This is set apart for all of us. And that's why this book is so powerful, because if we all start to adopt those values that they have, of course, some of those things are, you know, not overspending, and some of those things are, you know, investing and things like that. But some of these habits, if we just start to adopt some of those habits, we can put ourselves in a situation where not just we become successful, but our whole legacy, our whole tree. It only took one Oprah to change the whole Winfrey tree, right? One Jordan to change the whole Michael Jordan tree, if that makes sense. So we could be the one that completely changes our entire legacy if we start to adapt these things and then start to turn around, not just keep it for ourselves, but start turning it around and teaching others. And that's why I wanted to do this quick video, even though I'm not a video person, so bear with me, guys. But I'm going to start doing some more videos because I've learned a lot of things and I've grown in a lot of ways. And I just want to start imparting some of the knowledge and the wisdom that I've learned and just start teaching other people. So the two things that the Jewish community really stressed out of the seven, there's seven things, I'm not going to go over all seven, but the two things that I want to stress today is knowledge and education. And so one of the things that I teach people that are around me is read 10 pages of a good book every day, right? Read 10 pages because, look, if you read 10 pages every single day for 30 days, that's 300 pages. You at least read a book a month. And if you read a book a month, after 12 months, you've read 12 books, right? And if you've read 12 books, you've done more than the average person because the average person never reads a book after high school, right? Seriously, right? And so you just set yourself apart from everyone else simply because you decided to just do a simple mundane task of reading 10 pages every single day. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is they're really keen on being a professional, but moving into an entrepreneurship type of a role. So I'm not going to go through the whole book, but it says something about even after work, if you're working a job, you're moving yourself in a position where you're doing something entrepreneurial, right? And by the way, you know, for those of you who are looking and paying attention and you're looking for some type of an entrepreneurship that you like to get involved with that doesn't take a lot of time, feel free to reach out to me, and I'd love to help you with that. Love to maybe have a conversation with you on that. But listen, guys, I just appreciate you guys for just tuning in just for a little bit. I'm going to share more. If you like this, let me know, and then maybe I'll share more stuff. Continue to like, continue to comment, continue to share. Good to see you. For those of you who are on, Pastor Parker and Tanya, it's definitely good to see you guys. I love you guys. So God bless you all. Have a great night, and we'll see you all over the top.
Be no more sleeping under bridges for some homeless folks in Muncie.
They're now eligible to apply to live in tiny houses that are under construction right now by a Muncie group called Bridges Community Services. And this miniature housing initiative is the first of its kind in the state of Indiana. RTV6's Derek Thomas reports.
The tiny homes began arriving this morning. It would take about a month for the construction work to be completed on them.
By midday, the truck was still unloading the six 96-square-foot homes and placing them on their foundations. Each home will cost about $3,000.
I would love to be one of the ones selected. I think it would be amazing to live in this right here.
Brandon May has been homeless and unemployed for about 5 months. Later this week, he will get a new job at a factory. He says these humble quarters can help him get back on his feet.
When you first walk in, when you're accustomed to a big house, you know, stuff like that, you might think no, but when you think about the layout and you think about sleeping on a park bench or sleeping underneath a bridge or anything like sleeping in someone's car, this is way more than enough room.
The tiny homes will have electricity and heat, but a separate community building will be constructed where this basketball court is that will contain bathroom and shower facilities on one side and a kitchen facility on the other. None of the homeless selected to live here will be hardened criminals.
Everyone is vetted, which means basically we do police checks on everyone that comes in. We will not serve any violent offenders, and we will not serve any lifetime sex registry people.
Some neighborhood residents think it is a positive development.
When I seen it, I think it said on Facebook, and I thought, wow, that is a really good idea. Why didn't somebody think of that sooner?
And you think they're doing a community service?
Oh, yeah.
They expect 50 to 100 applications to live in these homes. They began accepting those applications October 1st. Move-in is set for November 1st. In Muncie, Derek Thomas, RTV6.
The entire tiny homes project will cost about $80,000. Staffers will be on the property 24 hours a day to make sure all goes well. Residents of the homes could pay up to $50 a month for utilities.
All right, today our topic is, we'll keep this short, because we're going to cover it several times throughout the year, plus through offline events. It revolves around Proverbs 13:22, and if any of you who are listening want to look that up, 1322. I know what it says, but look it up. And you want to call back in 619-768-2945 and read it to us all, great. If not, 1322, read what it says. And the title of today's podcast is Proverbs 1322, Reverse Mortgages, Legalized Inheritance Theft. I don't like reverse mortgages. It's a predatory loan, in my opinion. And it's a legalized way for lenders to steal your house or to steal an inheritance, rather. Steal an inheritance from people that normally would have gotten that house when one person transitions to the other, the next phase of life. But I look at reverse mortgages as legalized inheritance theft. So there's a solution for that, and that's why I brought up Proverbs 1322, Proverbs 1322. Anyway, in our program notes right here on Blog Talk Radio, reverse mortgages are weaponized mortgages. They're weaponized. They're designed to take your home, your house. It's designed to take the ancestral house. It's intended to, it's weaponized so it can legally steal the familiar house, the ancestral house from the descendants, the children, the grandchildren, even the great-grands. Okay, it's if you get one on your house becomes weaponized against you and your blood relatives. Now, their reverse mortgage solutions, 619-768-2945. If you want some mortgage reverse mortgage solutions, because they're out there, this is a form, reverse mortgages is also a form of house hijacking or a way of getting or a way that lenders can housejack you. You heard of a carjacking? Well, reverse mortgages or house hijackings. Now, Lindy, once you get one of those, your house has been housejacked. And we want to discuss that stop raising your children to work for other people and make other people rich. Train up your children so they can make you rich. And then you, in turn, can apply Proverbs 1322 and make them rich. I mean, excuse me, well, make everybody rich. Okay, well, we're going to cover this several more times. It's kind of quiet today. Still a little bit, still sort of the middle of the month, brand new year, 2023. If you have any questions on, if you need a reverse mortgage solution, text me. Or give me a call direct at 425-520-0605. That's 425-520-0605. Call that number if you need some type of strategy or some type of solution for a reverse mortgage that you want to get paid off but you don't know how you're going to do it, or even back property taxes. Once again, give me a call or text me at 425-520-0605. 0605. Okay, now. I'm going to play Acres of Diamonds here. Anybody wants to call in with any topic?
Back in the year 1843, a man was born who, during his lifetime, was to have a profound effect on literally millions of people. His name was Russell Herman Conwell. He became a lawyer, then a newspaper editor, and finally a clergyman in 1881. It was during this latter period that an incident occurred which was to change his life and the lives of countless others. One day a group of boys came to Dr. Conwell at his church and asked him if he would be willing to instruct them in college courses. They wanted a college education but lacked the money to attend. He told them he'd do all he could, and as the boys left, a thought, an idea began forming in Dr. Conwell's mind. He asked himself, why couldn't there be a fine college for poor but deserving young men? Here was a great idea, and he went to work on it at once. Almost single-handedly, Dr. Conwell raised between $6 and $8 million with which he founded the now well-known Temple University of Philadelphia. It was how he raised this money that I want to tell you about. He raised the money by giving lectures all over the country, more than 6,000 of them, and in each he told a story called Acres of Diamonds. This was a true story which had affected him very deeply, just as it affected his audiences. It was the story of a farmer who had settled in Africa. This farmer had heard the exciting stories of other African settlers who had made millions by discovering diamond mines. Realizing the African continent was rich in diamonds, the farmer could hardly wait to sell his farm and search for diamonds himself. He spent the rest of his life wandering the vast African continent, searching for the gleaming gems which brought such high prices on the markets of the world, but without success. Finally, in a sudden fit of despondency, broke and desperate, as I remember the story, he threw himself into a river and drowned. During this time, the man who had bought his farm one day found a large and unusual stone in the stream which cut through the property. It turned out to be a great diamond of enormous value, and then he discovered that his farm was covered with them. It was to become one of the world's richest diamond mines. Now, the first farmer had owned literally acres of diamonds, but had sold them for practically nothing in order to look for them elsewhere. If he had only taken the time and study to know what diamonds looked like in their rough state, and had first thoroughly explored the land he had owned, he would have had the millions he sought, right on the land he had been living upon. What so profoundly affected Dr. Conwell, and subsequently thousands of others, was the obvious fact that each of us is, at this moment, standing in the middle of his own acres of diamonds. If we will only have the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will usually find that it contains the riches we seek, whether they be financial or intangible or both. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's make sure that our own is not just as green, or perhaps even greener. While we're looking at other pastures, other people are looking at ours. There's nothing more pitiful to my mind than the person who wastes his life running from one thing to another, like the first farmer, forever looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and never staying with one thing long enough to find it. For no matter what your goal may be, the road to it can be found somewhere in the work in which you now find yourself. It wasn't until he was completely paralyzed, for example, and was forced to reach into the resources of his mind, that a Wisconsin farmer got the idea of producing exceptionally good meat products on his farm, and one of the country's largest meatpacking companies was born. His farm contained acres of diamonds, too. He had just never seen them before. A paper salesman found a dirty drinking glass in his hotel room and gave his company the idea of manufacturing paper cups, an idea that solved his financial problems for life. An insurance man got the idea of going back to all the people in his files and really working with them, serving them the way they should be served. That year, he wrote an additional $700,000 of insurance, made the million-dollar roundtable, and found he no longer had to approach cold prospects, that by working with the people he had already sold and on their referrals, he had acres of diamonds right in his filing cabinet. A man out west amassed a fortune with a single small gas station. In the beginning, when things were tough, he would ask himself each morning, "What can I do to increase my service to my customers?" He still asks that question of himself each morning when he gets up, and while he could have retired years ago a wealthy man, he continues to dominate the business in his area by thinking of new and better ways to be of service. Do you know what the so-called average man would have done in this last case? He would have been worried about how bad business was, because in the beginning my friend had a hard time just feeding his family. When one day a man would have driven in the station in a big shiny car, this average man, seeing the wealthy customer, would have said to himself, "I ought to be in his business instead of mine." You see, the average man believes some businesses are better than others, instead of realizing the truth that there are no bad businesses, there are just those people who do not know enough to see the opportunities in the work they're in. Jobs don't have futures, people do. No matter what our work happens to be, it's our business. We're its manager. If we can see no future or opportunity in it, it isn't because it's not there, but only because we can't see it. One time another farmer poked a tiny pumpkin into an empty 1 gallon jug. The pumpkin grew until it completely filled the jug and could grow no more. When it was ripe, the farmer broke the glass jug and had a pumpkin which had assumed the jug's exact shape. In life, each of us does a similar thing. we poke ourselves into jugs of our own deciding, and we can grow no larger. But let's be mature enough to realize that it is we who do the poking, not the job, nor the company, nor the territory, nor the economy, nor the times. We do it. We should dispense with limitations and realize there is virtually no limit to our growth and development on the land on which we now find ourselves. Above all, keep this thought in mind as often as you can on and off the job. Somewhere within the work you are now doing, there lurks an opportunity which will bring you everything you could possibly want for yourself and your family. In closing, here are 12 points to remember. 1. If we will develop the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will find it contains the riches, tangible and intangible, we seek. 2. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's realize our own pasture is unlimited. 3. That there are no bad jobs, but that it's the way in which we go about our work which makes it good or bad. 4. That we poke ourselves into jugs beyond which we cannot grow. Let's remove the limitations we've set upon ourselves. 5. That only preparation can ensure our taking advantage of the opportunities which will present themselves in the future, opportunities which are around us now. 6. Put your imagination to work on the many ways and means of improving what you're now doing. 7. Learn all you can about your job, your company, and your industry. 8. Since there's no limit to the growth of your industry, it must follow there is similarly no limit on your growth potential within that industry. 9. Our dynamic and growing economy needs and will well reward the uncommon man who seeks a place in this growth. 10. Begin to build your library of reference material pertaining to your company, industry, job, and on how to better serve and get along with people. 11. Set aside an hour a day for this study and research. And 12. Remember the story of the Acres of Diamonds. Zero Nightingale, thank you.
Okay, that's you're standing. If you got a problem, your solution. You're standing. Usually, you're standing right in the middle of it, and that's why we bring up Proverbs 13:22. You can apply that to a reverse mortgage situation if you're dealing with one, or know somebody who's dealing with one. Once again, I think reverse mortgages are, it's legalized inheritance theft, and we'll cover more on that week by week, or at least once a month with offline events to support it. Let's quickly go to the phone lines. 309, what do you got for us? Okay, he might not be around. Okay, it's real quiet this morning, so what we're going to do, we got some offline stuff that we're working on. So what we're going to do is knock off early here today. Get to work on that. We'll be back tomorrow. You guys have a good rest of the day.